Hey, I'm Ross Barber, and you're listening to The Jazz Spotlight with Jan Ilunga.
Episode 41.
Welcome to The Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey there, what's up? Jan Ilunga here from the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Welcome to this new episode. I hope your day is going well, or if it's evening where you are, I hope you're having a great evening. And I want to thank you for being with me for an episode that I'm sure you're gonna love. Because today we're gonna talk about something that, if you're in the music industry, something that you need, and it's something that either you have or you have to build. And we're gonna talk about websites today. And it's a great episode, and I have a sensational guest here that is going to tell us more about websites, you know, about the tool. He's a web designer from Glasgow, and he's going to tell us more about the tools he uses to craft websites for people in the music industry. He's going to share his knowledge. He's going to talk about mistakes he sees, for example, musicians and other people in the music industry make on their website, and I'm sure you're going to benefit from it. And if you have a website, or you don't have one yet, but you have been thinking about having a website, or perhaps you're thinking about hiring someone to develop the website for you, you're in the right place, and I'm sure you're going to benefit from this episode. But before we hear more about that, I want to give a couple of shout outs to people that have taken time to help me out and leave reviews on Stitcher and iTunes. So I'd like to thank Mr. Podcasts and Lauren Fire. Guys, thank you so much for your killer reviews. I really appreciate it. And if you're listening and if you would like to help the podcast out and hear a shout out, hear your name mentioned on the podcast, you can leave a review at thejazzspotlight.com/show for the iTunes page of the podcast, or thejazzspotlight.com/Stitcher for the Stitcher page of the podcast. Remember, like always, that you can find all the show notes and the things Ross and I talk about at thejazzspotlight.com/episode41. So without further ado, let's hear from this great, cool guest. Here is Ross Barber with Anatomy of a Website. Enjoy. Hey everyone, I'm here with another great guest for this episode of the Jazz Spotlight Podcast, and I'm sure that this episode is going to benefit you a lot, because today we're going to talk about the anatomy of a website. So whether you are a musician or you are a music venue, you have a festival, if you have a website, you don't want to miss this episode. And my guest here on the podcast is Ross Barber, a web designer from Glasgow. So today we go back to the UK, but this time to Scotland, where we haven't been yet. We go all the way to Glasgow to talk with Ross, who, in addition to being a great web developer, web designer, he's also a great writer. He sometimes writes about the music industry, music business, on his website, electrickiwi.co.uk, but he also has been guest posting on a variety of websites. And in addition to all this, he's also the co-host of the podcast Bridge the Atlantic alongside Marcio Novelli. I'm really excited to have you here, Ross. So welcome on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Thank you for being here. So I kind of gave a short introduction about yourself, but tell us a little bit more about you. How have you started getting your hands dirty building websites, especially for people in the music industry?
Well, I guess it kind of goes back to when I was about 12 years old. I really wanted to learn how to design a website. So I taught myself HTML and CSS and all of that coding stuff, and learned how to use like graphic programs to make things look nice. And then I went to university after I left school to study popular music. And it was in my last year of my degree that I kind of figured out that I didn't really want to pursue performance as a career. And I kind of fell into the promotion and marketing side of things. And I was able then to combine my web design skills with music, I guess, in that I had to build a website to promote myself as a singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. And my aim was to drive people via social media to my website to get them to sign up to my mailing list. And I ended up doing really well in that class. And it just kind of made sense to me that that was maybe the kind of path that I should go down. So I then did some unpaid work alongside full-time jobs, sort of freelancing for musicians. So I did a little bit of online marketing and a little bit of web design for musicians. And then they started referring me to some of their friends who were then paying clients. And it kind of slowly was building. I was still working full time at that point, but I realized that I wasn't happy in the full time job and the freelancing stuff was picking up. So I took the leap, I guess, and decided to go full time with the freelance stuff, which was really, really scary at the time, but thankfully it paid off and I'm still doing it full time 3 years later. So I'm very happy about that.
It sounds very exciting, and it's also an interesting story to, you know, for the listeners, because sometimes you embark in a path, be it studies or professional career, and during that journey you realize that what you want to do is actually something a little bit different. So like in your case, you started with the studies of popular music, even though you already had been coding and playing around with HTML and CSS and that kind of stuff before you actually you went to university. But it's really exciting, and if you guys go to electrickiwi.co.uk, there you can actually see the portfolio of Ross's work, and you really work with clients like a bit all over the world, we can say so. And what do you think it's the best part of having the opportunity to work with so many different people from so many different countries?
I mean, I like the variation. I like that every project is different, that every artist is different. I mean, one thing that was really great was I was working with a client from the US, and her manager at the time was from Italy. So as a thank you after we'd finished working on a tour, because I helped design like the website for the tour and the sort of the pre-sale merch that was being sold in order to kind of raise some funds for the tour. As a thank you, she invited me over to Italy for a few days to stay at her apartment in Florence, and she drove us everywhere. She drove us all around Italy, and it was a really great trip. And that was kind of one of the perks, I suppose, of working with people that are living abroad, because you've got the chance to go and visit them. And yeah, just experience things that you probably wouldn't have experienced before. And that's one other thing I like about working with musicians who are maybe from the US or Canada or wherever, is that when they come over to the UK, it's nice to be able to show them around and kind of make them feel welcome, because they may not have that, especially if they're touring by themselves. They'll have their fans and stuff, but it's not quite the same as having someone that they can, you know, just sort of sit and have dinner with. Like, 'cause something like that, I think, is important when you're on tour. You want to have a friendly face and someone that you can speak to that's, you know, not some crazy fan that's just going to be, you know, all over you, I suppose. So that's been nice. It's been good to do that. And I've had the opportunity to do that with a few clients from overseas.
That's very nice. That's very nice. And, you know, it's very true what you're saying about, you know, having international relationships and connections, and how great it is to, when you finally get to meet those people in person, people that you maybe have been writing with or talking on Skype or Google Hangouts for many months or years. And then when you finally get to meet them in person, if it's in your city, you get to be a kind of tourist guide. It's very nice what you said. And, you know, I hope your network will continue to grow. And I'm going to ask you more about networking later, because, guys, Ross is very active on social media. And especially if you're using Twitter, you should definitely start following him right now at Electric Kiwi. Follow him because he has a lot of great things to share, and he's also very entertaining. And, you know, sometimes I read some of his tweets and I just have a very good time. So it's definitely, Ross is definitely someone you want to follow on Twitter, both to have a good laugh, but also to get some very good music business tips and advice. And now, Ross, let's put your surgeon gloves as we start to with this anatomy of a website. So the first thing I have to ask you is, obviously, nowadays, it's relatively easy to build a website, also if one doesn't have much coding skills. And there are many different services out there, WordPress, Weebly, Blogger, Bunzoogle, there are very many. What are your favorites and which ones you have seen in your experience that have worked well for people you know in the music industry?
I'm going to be a bit biased here. WordPress is the one that I love. Almost all of my clients use WordPress. Mm-hmm. And there's a few reasons. I think out of all the different content management systems out there, WordPress is one of the easiest to use. Now, it's not saying that it's easy, because it does have a learning curve. Like, everything has a learning curve. But I definitely think it's one of the easiest, but also one of the more flexible and more powerful options. So that'd be why I would always recommend WordPress. You can choose from a variety of themes, or you can have a custom theme designed, which is what I do for all my clients. I do a completely custom theme, because the way that I look at it is that each artist is different. So I think that their website should be an accurate representation of them as possible. And while themes are good, especially if you're on a bit of a budget and, you know, you just need something online to get you started, that's fine, you know, to use like a free theme or a pre-designed theme. But I think if you have the budget and, you know, you're ready for it, then I say a custom theme is the way to go. And a system like WordPress would allow you to have something more creative and something that's really going to reflect who you are. Like you mentioned, yeah, there's lots of other platforms like Bunzoogle and Hostbaby. You know, they're great as well. But my personal preference is definitely WordPress, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes two biased people on the podcast, because I also use WordPress, and it's the platform I would recommend for the reasons you mentioned. And obviously, like you said, you know, depending on the budget you have available and also your kind of knowledge of WordPress or coding skills, you can, you know, go for a free template or a premium template or customize it, or go for additional features. For example, on the Jazz Spotlight, I use the thesis framework, that it's a kind of implement, works or runs on WordPress, but then there are some kind of more advanced stuff. But I also would recommend WordPress for starting out. And obviously, when Ross and I talk about WordPress, we mean WordPress.org, in the sense that your domain name should read www.yourbandname.com and not yourdomainname.wordpress.com. Is this right, Ross?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, self-hosted WordPress is definitely much, much better than WordPress.com. I mean, they both have pros and cons, but the self-hosted option, which would be your domain name, and you would have the WordPress site on your own hosting plan as part of your domain. You know, it's a lot more flexible. You've got, you know, there's lots of different plugins you can use, which will allow you to create like an online store, or, you know, show your tour dates, and basically everything that you would need, you'd be able to do on a self-hosted plan. Whereas the WordPress.com is a bit more limited. It's fine if, you know, if it's just a blog that you want, which is probably, you know, you're probably going to need more than that as a musician. You're not just going to need a blog. But if it was just a blog you were going for, then WordPress.com is absolutely fine. But if you need a bit more flexibility, customization, then, yeah, the self-hosted.org WordPress is what you would need.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And you mentioned hosting plans. Again, you know, like Ross said, for everything, there are great options, so many different options. So not only for a platform for softwares you can use to build your website, but also to host the website. And the one I would recommend is the one I use for the Jet Spotlight, which is called Bluehost. And you can find out more about it if you go to thejetspotlight.com/Bluehost. I've used it for some years now for other projects as well, not only for the Jet Spotlight. And I haven't had anything to complain about. And it's not expensive at all. I think they have a sign up for maybe some $4 or $5 a month, something like that. It's very worth checking into. And they, you know, and with that, you will also learn more about how additional functionalities of your website, such as, for example, setting up your own email address or these kind of little things that can help you look more professional. And now, Ross, you obviously see hundreds and hundreds of websites and you develop websites yourself. So when we talk about features of websites for musicians, what are the things that musicians should absolutely have on their websites?
I think it varies a little bit depending on the artist and their genre and kind of what stage of the career that they're at. But my sort of must-haves would be a mailing list, because you definitely need to be collecting email addresses from your fans. And, you know, yes, social media is great, but there's no substitute for actually having, you know, your audience's email addresses. If you're a touring band, which I guess most bands are going to be either touring or playing shows locally, you want to have somewhere that you can list your tour dates. Being a musician, the most important part is the music. So please don't forget to have your music on your website, whether it's streaming or purchase links. I mean, I think you should always allow people to listen to your tracks from your website. And whether you want to offer them the full tracks or just previews, that's up to you. My personal recommendation would be to offer the full track for streaming, because it's kind of what people expect now. But have a place with, you know, have a link right there and then that they can buy it. Because if they're listening to it and they like it, they'll be more inclined to click buy right there and then and purchase it. It's also useful to have a press area. So you may not have many press quotes like from reviews or anything like that as yet, but that's fine. You can use your press area to act a little bit like an electronic press kit. So you would have sort of high-res photos, videos, contact information and a bio, preferably a couple of variations of the bio, you know, different lengths for press. You should definitely, that I've actually seen missing on a lot of artists' websites lately, like people that I've wanted to get in contact with, I can't find a way to contact them. So please have that. It makes things so much easier for everyone.
Contact information.
Definitely. And a bio. I know I mentioned that in the press section, but I think you should have a bio for the general public to read and see as well, because I think now it's very important for people to get a feel for who you are. So when I say a bio, I do mean a good bio. there's a lot of bios that are just very, I don't want to say bad, but they kind of are bad. You know, it needs to be interesting, and you may not want to write your bio yourself. You may need to get someone else to write it for you, because they'll be able to find different angles that are interesting to an outsider. So those would be the things I would say. Definitely mailing list, tour dates, music, a press section, contact, and bio. A blog is useful, but only if you're going to use it, because there's nothing worse than having a blog and there's, you know, the last post was made a year ago, because a venue or a journalist or whoever's visiting, if they see that and think, oh, their last post was a year ago, they're clearly not doing anything anymore, that's going to do you more harm than good. So if you do go for a blog, which is always recommended, make sure you're updating it regularly. The one other thing would be your social links. So, you know, you want to encourage people to be following you on whichever platforms you use. But my main piece of advice would be that your website should be like the center of your online activity, and your social links basically should link back to your website, but also like give people a way to connect with you socially from your website, but don't let them, you know, don't let them replace your website, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with the things you said, and actually want to go throw a couple of those or comment on a couple of those. And the first one is email list. And, you know, if you guys have been following the Jazz Spotlight for some time, you know that we have talked about email lists before. And the reason why you hear email lists popping up over and over again, it's because they are a very powerful tool. And as I said in the past, the service I use to build my email list is called AWeber, and you can try it if you go to thejetspotlight.com/getAWeber. You can sign up for as little as $1. So it's less than a cup of coffee. So it's a very, very little investment, but it can lead to great results. And it's something that I think many artists are missing out. So an email list, it's definitely something you want to check out. And also when Ross talked about the music, it's a very, very good point. And it's relatively easy to have music on your website. You can upload it through your website, or you can use services like SoundCloud, for example, and then just have the SoundCloud stream on your website. Definitely, you want to have your music on your site, but please don't put it in autoplay. Don't.
No, definitely not. No, I mean, if we move on to like mistakes that musicians make, autoplay is definitely near the top of that list. If I visit a website, normally I have like 20 windows open at a time, which is terrible, but I think a lot of us do, especially if we're busy and we're working on lots of different things. The last thing you want is to open a window and music starts playing, and then you have to find out which window it's coming from. Chances are you're just going to close all the windows because you're annoyed, because you're already listening to music probably. And then you're going to forget whose website you're trying to visit in the first place. So you've essentially lost someone before they've even, you know, looked at your website. Don't do autoplay. It's bad. It makes us all sad. So we don't want that.
But also about the bio, you know, Ross, I think you had a very good point, because unfortunately it's true, there are bios that are pretty bad, and it's good to think about what you said, to have someone write the bio for you, because as you said, they might find different angles and different ways. Maybe it's just the words you are using. It's not necessarily what you put in the bio, but it's the way you presented it that it doesn't make it appealing or interesting. That's definitely something.
Yeah, I think when you're writing about yourself, it is really difficult to know what parts are interesting and what parts aren't so interesting. Because a lot of people, I think they sort of see the bio as it has to be like a chronological list of everything they've done. So like, I started playing guitar when I was 5, and then I joined my first band when I was 12, and all this stuff is like, but none of that is really relevant to where you are now. So, you know, fair enough. Maybe what to do is write a draft and send it to someone, you know, someone that's going to give you an objective opinion, not someone that's just going to tell you it's great just because they want to make you smile. You know, you want to get an honest opinion on what your bio is. But I do think the best approach you can take is actually find someone who writes bios for a living, or a music writer who does bio writing on the side, because they're going to know what makes an interesting bio, and they'll know the questions to ask you to get the best information to put in that bio. So I would definitely recommend, it may cost a bit of money, but think of it as an investment. It's a bio you're probably going to use for a year, 2, maybe 3 years, until something big happens in your career, and then it'll be updated. But, you know, you definitely need a solid bio that's really going to draw people in. And you know, if they've not listened to your music, your bio needs to make them want to listen to your music. If they have listened to your music, then your bio needs to sort of sell your personality to them, because more and more, I think people, as well as liking the music, they need to like the person, and they need to feel that they've got some kind of connection with you. And a good bio can really help to make that connection. And that could be the difference between someone following you on Twitter and not following you on Twitter. So it's important. And I think it's something that, unfortunately, a lot of artists do kind of miss. Like, the bio is just not quite there.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking about mistakes you see musicians make online on their websites, things they do the wrong way or things they're missing out on. What else do you have to say about those? We mentioned the autoplay, outdated blog.
I mentioned the contact information as well. Like, that's such a big one, because, you know, you can be missing out on a lot of opportunities by not having contact information. You know, even just an email address or a contact form, like some way of people getting in touch with you to say, hey, I'm interested in booking you for a show, or hey, would you like to come on my podcast, or hey, I'd like to write a feature about you. This happened to me. I was trying to track down an artist for my podcast, and I couldn't find any way of contacting them other than through their Facebook page. And, you know, sending a message to someone on their Facebook page, if they get a lot of messages, it's likely that they might not read it, or they'll miss it, or something will happen. So it's so important to have a way of contacting you. And, you know, if you don't want to deal with your emails, then make sure you've got someone that can, you know, that can handle the emails for you, whether it's an assistant or maybe your manager or, you know, someone. There just has to be a way for people to get in contact with you. So important. And the other kind of thing that I find, and I don't really find it so much these days, but is putting way too much stuff on your website, mm-hmm. particularly the homepage. Like, I think this happens mostly when people are building their website themselves, because they don't really have that filter to say, no, I don't need this. They just think like a new plugin or a new feature is cool. And then they end up just having way too much stuff. Like, they'll have like 20 or 30 different things on the homepage. So you visit it and you don't know where to click. You don't know where to look. You don't really know what the intention is. So my advice for that would be, is if you are an artist that tours a lot, the main focus on your homepage should be your tour dates. If you are an artist that's just released a new album, then, you know, you want to have that up front and center, rather than having, you know, absolutely everything there, because people don't know what you want them to do. And that is a mistake that I do see, but it's not as bad as I think it used to be, when people used to have all these animations and stuff on their page that just had nothing to do with anything. That's kind of thankfully, you know, died down a bit. But yeah, I think they need to focus. There needs to be a focus.
Yeah, and I think it's great advice that you gave, and that you mentioned the information overload. So, you know, don't try to put everything on your homepage. Try to think, like Ross said, like, what is it that it's relevant and it's useful to be there? And also about the contact information, it's a very good point. And if maybe you're listening to Ross and I and you're like, but I'm not sure if I want to share my private email with, you know, everyone, it's fine. Because if you use a web hosting, you have your own WordPress site, you can easily create an email that is, for example, your name at yourdomainname.com that you can use exclusively for, you know, the business aspect of your life, for your music, for your, you know, online presence as a musician. So that's definitely something that can help you in case you're a bit afraid of sharing your email information with people on the internet. And obviously we've talked about websites from a do-it-yourself perspective. So we, you know, if someone wants to do things by themselves. But another option is to actually outsource the process. So to go to websites like Freelancers or Elance or even Fiverr. You can find people also on Fiverr that develop websites. And you, Ross, as a web designer, you obviously have been on the other side of the conversation. So as someone that provides the service, but what do you think musicians should look for when they're looking for, you know, web designers, when they're looking for freelancers? What are the couple of things you think they should keep into consideration?
I think definitely one of the main things is whether or not you like their work. You know, definitely have a look and see what they've done in the past. Look at the kind of artists they've worked with and see what the results are. But also, as well as looking at the work itself, find out what their clients say about them. You know, would they recommend them? Because I think that's quite important as well. And also, if you can try and get a feel for who the designer is beforehand, you know, to see whether or not you'd be a good kind of fit. And I would say as well, make sure that you try and plan ahead because a lot of designers will be booked up for weeks or sometimes months in advance. So you can't just contact the designer and say that you need a website tomorrow, because it's not going to happen. So you definitely need to be organized and try and really think ahead. So if you need a website for a particular date, so maybe you need a website by the end of November, don't leave it until the last week of November to start looking for a designer, because that's just going to stress everyone out. You know, start thinking about it as far in advance as possible. So if you know that you're releasing an album, you know, make that part of your album release schedule, is I need to get a website together a month before the album comes out, you know, for example.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I think, you know, it's very important what you said, especially that you actually have to like the work of the web designer. And that's really important, because sometimes we just think, or musicians just think, I have to, you know, get something done, as you know, the cheaper the better. And it's not always like that. You have to invest. So it's important that you like the work, and that also, you know, maybe there are some testimonials or some people that have given feedback, positive feedback about the work that has been done by the developer. And also, like Ross says, you know, people are busy. So, you know, not because you need the website done by next week, it means that you're going to have it done by next week. It can happen, but you don't have very good chances for that. So keep in mind that people are busy. And as Ross said, plan ahead, try to put it into your schedule, and also start to think, what is it that you want to achieve with your website? I think that's something that really helps developers and designers. Would you agree, Ross?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, have as much ready in advance as possible. I mean, one of my recent clients I just finished a website for, she, when we met up for coffee to talk about what she needed, she gave me everything on a USB stick right there and then. She said, here's all the photography, all the content. And we did finish that website in about a week, maybe even just over a week. But because she had everything ready in advance, it was such a quick and easy process. So there wasn't any emailing back and forth saying, hey, can you get me your bio, and can you get me these tracks and all this stuff, because she'd already done it all. And ideally, if everyone did that, it would be, you know, such a quick and easy process for everyone. So yeah, definitely think about what you want on your website in advance and try and prepare as much of that as possible. I mean, it's probably not going to be possible to have it all ready, but even if you've got like 50% of it ready, that's going to make a big difference to the delivery time, and it's just going to make the whole process more relaxed and enjoyable for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we hope that this episode of the Jazz Spotlight Podcast can help you if you're about to launch a website, or if you're thinking about hiring a designer, a developer to do that for you. We hope that this helps. And now I want to ask you something, to step away for a moment from websites and web design, and talk about your writing, because you write, you blog, and there is a post in particular that I really enjoyed, that it was called Music, It's a Relationship Business. And I mentioned earlier that Ross is really active online on social media. Again, especially if you're on Twitter, at Electric Kiwi. So I want to ask you, Ross, to tell us a little bit more about that post and why. I mean, I totally agree with you, but why do you think music is a relationship business, and what, you know, what should that tell to musicians who are listening to us today?
I think, I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, it's about who you know. Like when it comes to, you know, maybe getting gigs or moving up in the industry, it's about who you know. And I think to an extent it's right. But it's not necessarily, you know, who you're born into knowing or anything like this. I think it's just a case of, you know, finding the people that you want to know and getting to know them. And that's kind of the approach I've taken, and not even really thinking about what I want to get out of it, just more that I see people that I think are doing great things, and I want to get to know them and see if there's any way that we can collaborate and help each other out. So what I normally would do, and I would recommend musicians do this as well, is connect with other musicians that you like and see if there's a way that you can help each other out. And that can be something as simple as they've got a new single out, you promote their single on your social media, you write a blog post about their single, or, you know, something as simple as that, just sharing something that you enjoy that's going to benefit them. And it's also going to benefit your fan base, because chances are if they like you, then it's very likely that they're going to like the musician that you are sharing. So I think the mistake that too many musicians make is that they think of other musicians as their competition.
Mm-hmm.
Think that it's maybe counterproductive to share, you know, the music of an artist who's similar to them, because they might think that, you know, my fan might buy their music, they're not going to buy my music. But it doesn't work like that. It's, you know, people don't have like a set number of, you know, artists that they'll buy music from, and then, you know, because you've suggested a new artist that you get moved down the ranks or anything, you know, ridiculous like that. I think if you share something that you like, it's going to benefit that artist. It's going to show a little bit of your personality to your fans, and you know, you never know, the other artists may like your music too if they've not already heard you, and then they might share with their fans, and then that way you're sharing your audience, and that can only be a good thing. So yeah, that's one really simple way to kind of make a connection or help someone out in a way that's not going to cost you anything, really. It's just you're doing a nice thing, and that's kind of the approach that I've taken in general. Is I share people's content, I offer to help them out, and just kind of generally treat people the way you want to be treated. And I think social media is great in so many ways, but I think because we're all hiding behind like Twitter profile pictures, people sometimes forget that there's actually a person there. And you don't know who that person knows or what that person is going to do for you in the future. So just be good to them. It's kind of my advice. It's all just about being social and being a good person.
Yeah, and to be all about collaboration and building relationships, like you say in your post. I agree with you. And, you know, guys, you are listening to some advice from someone that has some 20,000 followers on Twitter. And, you know, 20,000 followers means that he knows what he's doing. He's not, you know, fluffing. He knows really what he's doing. And Russ, I have to ask you this, because obviously there are so many different social media platforms. What is the number one platform you think everyone in the music industry should be on, or your favorite one?
Tough one. I think it's a really difficult one, because like not every platform works for everyone. Like personally, Twitter is my favorite, and I think, you know, ideally every musician should be on Twitter, because it's a really great way of connecting with people and sharing your thoughts, and you can follow people that follow artists that are similar to you. So, you know, it's really, the tools are there to find your audience really easily if you are willing to invest a little bit of time in, you know, in finding the people and connecting with them and building relationships with them one by one. But not everyone likes Twitter. So, I mean, I would love to say that Twitter is the one that they should all be on, but not going to happen. So I would say probably YouTube is the one that I would say everyone should be on. And the reason for that is that it's the number two search engine in the world, but it's the number one search engine for music. So if you're a musician and you're not on YouTube, potentially you're missing out. But ideally, I would say that the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram would be the four big ones that I would recommend being on. But ultimately, you have to do what feels right for you. And if you hate using Twitter, it's going to show. So don't use it if you don't like it. But ideally, all four can work very well together.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously you had a very good point in that, not only in the sense that this was a tough question, but for the fact that everyone has different, you know, different preferences, different habits, platforms they like, they dislike. So obviously you are right. But thank you for sharing a couple of tips on YouTube, for example. So guys, if you are not on YouTube yet, then you're really missing out. But I think also on Twitter, because I've really seen the power of Twitter, especially for building relationships, because it gives you direct access to people. You can talk real time and you can share their content and interact very easily. And I think it's a very great tool. And now, Ross, I would like to wrap up our conversation with Bridge the Atlantic, your upcoming podcast. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? You are a co-host, and it's interesting that you are based in Glasgow and your co-host, Marcio Novelli, is in Canada. So that's, I assume that's also where the title comes from, Bridge the Atlantic. It's very interesting. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so basically, it's something I've been thinking about for a while, but never really thought about putting it into action until it was Marcio that suggested that we start a podcast, and more specifically, a video podcast. So he mentioned it to me, and we just kind of jumped at the idea, and we thought, yeah, let's do this. Let's just go for it. Let's not even think about it. Let's not spend any time debating what we should do or what we shouldn't do. Let's just start it. So that's basically what we did. And because we've both built up networks over the last few years with musicians and other people in the creative industries, we already had kind of a few guests in mind to invite onto our initial shows. So the premise of the show basically is we interview musicians and creative people, mostly linked to the music industry in some way, but not necessarily. Basically, they have to be involved in the creative industries, whether it's film or TV or photography or something like that. So basically, it's kind of an informal show. We do a little bit of chat about their career and some advice that they would offer to people to get to the kind of position they're at right now. So we kind of combine like entertainment, a little bit of education, but the key feature of our show is we want it to be fun, and we want you to have a good time kind of getting to know people on a little bit of a more personal level than you maybe would on some other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really excited. We're due to launch sometime in the next few weeks. Just kind of not sure when this one will air, so I don't want to say an exact date, but yeah, we're really excited. Well, I mean, we've got some really good interviews lined up. We've recorded quite a lot of them already, and some of them have been really hilarious. So I can name a few of the guests. So we've got Tyler Hilton, who's a client of mine, and he singer songwriter actor. He starred in One Tree Hill, Walked the Line, and recently he was in a TV show with Halle Berry called Extant. So we've got his interview will probably be one of the first ones to come out. We've also spoken with James Black, who's a guitarist in a Canadian band called Finger 11. They had quite a few big hits in the early 2000s. We've spoken with a lot of people. We've done about 20 interviews so far. And, so far the response from all the guests has been very positive, and we're just, really, really excited to finally launched. I mean, it's only been in the works for a couple of months, but it feels like longer. In that we've been so excited about it, and we've shared it with a few kind of close friends, and obviously our guests. They know what's involved, so we're really excited. And it's just we're getting there. I'm just looking forward for it to be out there, but nervous at the same time because it's a new project that is very different from anything that me or Marcio have done before. So kind of new territory. So yeah, nervous, excited, all those words.
You know, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I can't wait to hear from to hear it. And if people want to learn more about it and listening to it, where are the episodes going to be online, and where can they find Bridge the Atlantic? What is the fastest way to find it?
Probably the best way will be through our website. You can get to our YouTube and all of our social platforms through there. So it's bridge-the-atlantic.com. jazz-atlantic.com because britishatlantic.com was taken. So yeah, we've got an annoying hyphenated domain name, but hopefully we'll get the britishatlantic.com soon. And you can find us on Twitter as well. We're bridge_Atlantic because Bridge the Atlantic's too long. So social media is so much fun. So yeah, you can find us there. And yeah, we're just really looking forward to getting out there. We've got a good feeling about it. So
that, you know, it's great. And I will make sure to include all the links of, you know, the things we have mentioned, including Bridge the Atlantic, at the show notes. Ross, I want to thank you so much for being here on the podcast today and for telling us a little bit more about websites and, you know, what should be on websites, what mistakes people should avoid doing, and what to look for when looking for web developers and designers. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, all right. We are back. Hey, Ross, thank you so much for bringing your knowledge, your expertise to the podcast and providing value to myself and the listeners. And guys, I really hope you benefit from the things Ross and I discussed on this episode. And in case you're thinking about different platforms you can use to build a website, we have talked especially about WordPress, but you probably know by yourself that there are many platforms. So if you want to try something out, I recommend you go to thejetspotlight.com/episode39, where Andrew Hall and myself talked about must-have online tools for musicians, and we talked about different platforms for building websites. And by the way, guys, a quick note, because this episode was recorded before Bridge the Atlantic actually launched, so I'm really happy to tell you that Bridge the Atlantic has officially launched. So after you're finished with this episode, make sure to go on iTunes, type in Bridge the Atlantic under the podcasts category, and hit the subscribe button. And after you've listened, make sure to leave some ratings and reviews to help Ross and Marcio out. Marcio, Ross, all the best for Bridge the Atlantic. I love the show, and I'm sure there's going to be more and more and more and more listeners. Good luck to you guys. And so back to the Jazz Spotlight podcast. You know that tomorrow, it's not only it's Halloween, but it's also the last day of the month. So tomorrow there's going to be the Jazz Festivals Guide for the month of November, and you will be able to find it at thejazzspotlight.com/November 2014. Okay, and about next week. Next week, it's going to be an amazing week, and you don't want to miss that out, because the first guest is actually a sensational performer. I mean, he's one of the most acclaimed instrumentalists in the world. If I give you just two words, I'm pretty sure you're going to figure out who he is. So here are the words. The first word is jazz, and the second one is vibraphone. Yeah, you guessed that right. That legendary jazz artist is going to be on the podcast. And the second episode is going to be as exciting as the first one, because we're going to go back to the topic of touring and gigging, and we're going to talk about a specific tool, or a great tool, I should say, that you can use to look for gigs and much more. I'm Yanni Lunga, and this is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a great Halloween, everyone, and have a great weekend.